everyone. Welcome back to Womansplain. Today we have a very special guest, Delia Hughes. She is CEO and co-founder of an exciting new candy company called Tazzy. I'm going to pass it over to her to give a little intro, and then we'll dive into her story.
Hi, everyone. My name is Delia. I'm the co-founder of Tazzy, and we started this company 5 years ago and have had a pretty roundabout change in our company. So I'm excited to talk to everyone about it.
Amazing. I know. I know you have an extremely kind of winding journey to end up where you are, so I'm excited to get into that. But I think first, I'd love to just start off with kind of a little bit of your background, where you went to college, what you studied, and how do you end up in the food space?
Absolutely. So I grew up in New York, and I knew I wanted to study food science. Food science is a major where you go into it and you end up typically going into product development. So if you think of like Kraft, Heinz, which is now Kraft Heinz, Mondelez, any of these big food companies, they all hire a ton of food scientists to develop every single item that they sell. So I only applied to schools with food science.
Oh, wow.
Ended up going to Cornell, which was like the land grant university of New York State, and studied food science, where I actually met my co-founder. And while I was there, I got really into cheese. So the beginning of my career was like all in the cheese industry. And that was like my passion. I was so obsessed with cheese. People are always like, why did you not start a company in cheese? And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't have an idea. But yeah, I studied abroad in Parma, Italy, like learning how to make Parmigiano-Reggiano, prosciutto di Parma, working in the plants.
Really cool. Yeah.
And then my first job out of college was a cheese buyer for Sam's Club.
Awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Why were you so interested in food? Like, did you just have a very food-focused family growing up, and why cheese also?
My family is so food, like such food people. Like both my parents are from New York, just really always exposed to so many international foods, and they were just like foodies by definition. And I just loved it. And I think originally when I was in high school, I wanted to be a nutritionist, because that was like the only thing I knew that you could do in food other than being a chef. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't necessarily want to be a chef, right? I'm not like that culinary, but I want to do something in food. Like, what's a food career? And my mom was actually like, let's like brainstorm and talk to people and think about like, what else is there besides nutrition? And we found food science, which is just this super cool combination of like basically a chemistry degree pairing with a business element.
Yeah.
And it's all about innovation and product development, as I was saying. And I was like, this is so cool, because you could be creative. You could, you know, think about a consumer and what a consumer wants. And I'm like, this is like everything I love. Yeah. So I don't know. I was just like really drawn to it.
Yeah. And that's such a cool major. I feel like it's not very
specific.
Yeah. It's not very common.
Especially knowing that at 18, that's kind of like insane, but really cool. Obviously, you had such a passion. That passion has kind of guided through you through life, which is incredible. So you major in food science. Also where you met your co-founder, right?
Yes.
In college. Okay.
We met in college. We both were working in a candy laboratory.
Oh my gosh.
And
foreshadow.
It's so funny. We were making kosher and halal gummy bears and marshmallows. Wow. AKA, when you make a marshmallow or a gummy bear, you typically use a pork gelatin, neither of which are kosher or halal. Mm-hmm. So we were using fish gelatin to make these marshmallows and gummy bears to make that like chewy texture. And it tasted like SHIT, because you can taste the fish.
Yeah.
But we were like studying the textures. So anyway, we met there, and honestly, Lindsay and I were always like so on the same page. We're very much like very, very similar people. And it was such an interesting test, because we took all of our classes together. We both struggled. Like, we were not like hardcore science people. So like us in organic chemistry was like disaster zone, but we like made it through together. And it was stressful. I think like college is one of the most stressful times in a person's life.
Yeah.
Because so high intensity, you don't know what you're doing with your life yet. You have no idea what's going to happen.
True.
How am I going to make money? What's my career going to look like? So it's like a pressure zone.
Sure.
And Lindsay and I like stuck through it together, like in every class. And it was just such a good test to be like, oh, we would work really well together, because it's a similar kind of environment. And we both always wanted to start our own food company.
That's amazing.
Like We came up with this fruit pasta idea that we were like, we're going to make pasta out of fruit.
How?
Who knows? Like, we were just like always like thinking of like,
these... like, yeah, but you're like, whatever. I mean, it's a pretty unique idea. Like, honestly.
I'm like, yeah, how? Good question. We have no idea. Farms. We would like, figure it out.
Of course. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Organic chemistry will help.
Oh no. College is great. Obviously, I met someone in college. So yes. Also met our co-founder there.
Yes. Exactly.
And it is such a stressful time in your life. Like very formative. You're also just so young and the first time you're on your own. So that's a lot of just emotional like turmoil. You're going through a lot of like life events. Like, I don't know, probably your first love, your first heartbreak. You go through like lots of just maturity, maturing. You're still kind of in like the phase of when you really want to be accepted. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like all of these things are like very difficult. While at the same time, you're also in this really high pressure like career environment. You're trying to figure it out. Oh. So it's tough.
And it's like a constant comparison zone, yes, right? It's like that age old quote, or new age quote, where it's like comparison is the thief of joy.
Right, yeah.
I think that's college is that. Cause you're like, totally. Oh my gosh, she got a summer internship. What am I doing this summer? Oh my God. Yeah. He's like working for his family company. Like, I don't have a family company, you know? And it's like, all right, you got to focus on yourself and figure it out for yourself. But yeah, I mean, having someone like Lindsay get me through classes together, it was amazing.
That's amazing. Awesome. And okay, and then you skip to after, so your first job, a buyer at Sam's Club, actually pretty cool. So tell me about that. Yes. What is a food buyer also? What did you do?
Okay, so it was the best job ever. I was fortunate to get a summer internship my junior year of college at Sam's Club as a merchandise intern, but I was in the dry grocery department. So think like cereals, dried fruit, rice, coffee, tea.
Yeah.
This was like my department. I was focused on dried fruit and we were like bidding out essentially new suppliers for dried blueberries, dried
mango.
And I was like, wow, I love this, because what it was like looking at the profitability of items and then doing an RFP and figuring out if we can get like a really high quality product for less money to offer to our members. And for those that don't know, Sam's Club is Walmart's version of Costco.
Yeah.
Big box retailer, but really limited SKU environment. So there's not like 10 dried mangoes. There's one.
Because they're trying to keep costs low.
And it's just like really streamlined. And I loved it. And I had so much like chutzpah back then, because I was like, at the end of the summer, they're like, we really like you. Would you want to come back here? And I'm like this New York girl, like,
where is Sam's Club?
It's in Bentonville, Arkansas.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a New Yorker.
Did you move to Arkansas? Were you struggling? Were you lonely? I feel like that's
no, really... I loved it.
Really?
So it was, but I was there like summer, right? There's all these interns there. Yeah. It's so fun.
With Walmart, yeah.
So everybody's hanging out together.
Stuff to do, yeah.
It's like freshman year of college where nobody knows each other.
It's true. And you also have no one knows anyone in fucking Arkansas. Like, you're definitely all like desperate for friends.
Walmart recruits people from all over the country. Yeah, so it was like all these like kids my age, and we had so much fun. So, but I was like, yeah, the only way I would come back here is if you give me a job in the cheese department.
Amazing.
And they're like,
literally good for you, honestly.
And they made it happen. And I was like,
wow.
Oh, crap.
Actually, that's a great company. Okay.
I was like, oh, crap. I think I'm going to take this job.
You're like, I've girl bossed too hard. Here I am.
I'm like,
Arkansas.
I don't know if I would do that
I'm
today.
But yeah, now. Yeah.
So, yeah, then I took a full-time job with Sam's Club as a cheese buyer. So what does a cheese buyer do? Or a buyer at Sam's Club? You're choosing the items that are on the shelf.
Okay.
We had, at that time, around 650 clubs.
Okay.
650 stores. And you're choosing every item that is in the cheese set. So
you're studying a lot of like what's popular, what's selling, what's not. Why is it not selling? But there's a lot of reasons why things don't sell.
Yes.
So you're analyzing that.
Price point, size, bulk.
Trends.
At Sam's Club, we had two main members.
Okay.
It was like a family.
Okay.
Like so, or an individual, and then small businesses.
Okay.
So in a limited SKU environment, though, I have one blue cheese. And that blue cheese needs to be able to be used by a family and a small business. That's like maybe making it at their food truck or their little cafe. The packaging has to be right. The price point has to be right. And then
it needs to be quality enough that it can be used, but also not too high quality. That's too expensive.
Exactly. Yeah. So
pretty hard.
It's really about, we managed a like $850 million P&L.
Wow.
And it's
just
like,
for cheese.
Just for cheese.
That's kind of insane.
And it was like me and my boss, and we kind of ran the whole country. And it was awesome because it was entrepreneurial in that you could create new items with your suppliers. You're setting the price points. You're negotiating all the costs. You're holding the like yearly reviews with all your suppliers coming in, showcasing you innovations because we had an innovation set. And then we also had like this huge Hispanic cheese program, which was fascinating because it was really broken up by area of the country. So California versus Michigan versus Florida versus New York clubs all had different Hispanic cheese sets based on ethnicities that were like very dominant in that area. And that was, it was so detail oriented, but that program, like we sold like crazy amounts of cheese. So I don't know, it really exposed me to like, who is the end consumer? What do they want? What do they value? And make sure you have the right items there. Not items I'm eating. Like, what does my member want? What does my consumer want? Which honestly parlays perfectly into like what I do now, right? Yeah. It's like finding your core consumer and what do they care about and developing items for them.
Right. I guess like you probably gained a ton of skills that a normal 22-year-old wouldn't get. Yeah. You're like literally definitely doing everything from like R&D to actually like figuring out what people want and like all the business side.
Definitely. And like, then traveling the world, like going to Italy, going to Germany for trade shows because we had a ton of like imported cheeses that we would sell. California, Wisconsin, like traveling all the time. And I was just like, this is such an amazing job. And it really exposed me to like, what could a career in food look like?
Yeah.
Like to me as a buyer, you're the one choosing the items that are going into the stores. Like, that's a really cool job.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then there are so many other jobs. Like, you could be the supplier in Italy, like making the cheese in Italy and then selling it into the United States. You could be the Wisconsin broker that's representing all the creameries in Wisconsin and that don't have their own salespeople, and you're like representing them to these big box retailers. And I was just like, there's so many cool things you can do in this space. So yeah, it was amazing. It was an amazing first job.
Yeah. Amazing. It seems like the team was really small, so you're able to kind of wear really so many different hats and like take ownership of everything.
Definitely. Because it was like presenting to leadership, to like I was saying, managing your P&L, to analyzing data every week, what's selling, what's not selling, what should we be cutting, to then like choosing new items. So it was so fun.
So how long did you spend?
I was only there like 2 to 2.5 years.
Okay.
I was at this point where I'm like, okay, I could either go buy for another category, which could be like frozen fruit, let's say. But I was like, I kind of get buying. Like, I kind of get the skills. What's next? Like, what's the next thing I can learn? And in the cheese world, importing was huge. So at Sam's Club, we didn't import anything directly. We worked with like domestic suppliers that would import for us.
Okay.
And importing is a crazy business. I mean, now you hear all this stuff with tariffs, right? But with importing, it's like, okay, how do I get Parmigiano Reggiano from Parma to the port in New Jersey to then pay, what duties do I have to pay? What taxes do I have to pay to then get it into a warehouse to be cut and wrapped and then shipped out on a truck to the retailers? Like, how does that whole process work? So I was really fascinated by it, especially because a lot of the cheese we eat in the United States is imported. So I went to go work for the largest privately owned food importer in the US.
Wow.
It's a mouthful. They sit on the port in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and I ran 5 countries for them.
Wow.
It was Switzerland, the Netherlands, some Irish products, Belgium, Austria.
Wow. And this was beyond cheese.
It was still mostly cheese.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say chocolate.
And one like gluten-free bread item.
Okay.
That we were trying to like develop that didn't, that's it important. Didn't end up working.
Yeah. But it's random. It's from the Nordic countries. Like, I wouldn't think they
like
would.
Like, you had the cheeses?
No, they like them. Like, they would get the gluten-free. Anything.
Oh, that was coming from Ireland.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Which the UK, there is like a big like gluten-free population.
It's like because it's like a gene. Like, a certain percentage of Irish people have celiac.
Yes. Yeah. And it's interesting when you go to Ireland, you see like there's so many more gluten-free products.
Yeah, it's a really common gene or whatever. I know because like I'm half Irish, so a lot of my family is celiac. Yeah.
Yeah. No, same. Yeah. It's really interesting. So what was so cool about this job, I loved it so much. It's a family-run company, super successful. And it was basically like, here's your sales goals. Here's your profit goals. We'll talk to you in a year.
Wow.
So it was like, okay.
Wow.
Go figure out how you're going to hit that. And you can hit that by, you know,
lots of ways.
Working with your same suppliers, with the products that they're importing into the US, and or like creating some new innovation with them and trying to sell it into Costco, trying to sell it into Trader Joe's, like go make stuff happen. Wow. So the way that worked was the suppliers were based in the European countries that I was responsible for. I would talk to them like every day. There was a buyer. I was a business development manager. So it was a little bit more like brand management, I would say, like sales, marketing, strategy. And then there was a buyer who was like really responsible for the logistics of like, okay, how much product are we ordering from Amsterdam this week? And when is it going to get here? And building out all the forecasts based on sales. And then I was responsible for like, okay, Trader Joe's, I want to develop a seasonal cheese program for Trader Joe's and try to sell it in. Because I think this could be so cool. We could create a summer cheese, a winter cheese, spring, fall, and rotate it. And I would then work with the suppliers and like come up with some like new formulas, new cheeses. We would have the product like overnighted from Belgium. I would then like work with our sales rep to be like, okay, let's pitch this to Trader Joe's. And then we would pitch it and the buyer would be like, this sounds awesome. Like, let's make it happen.
Wow.
So it was really cool, like developing innovations for so many different retailers, food service customers like US Foods, Sysco that are servicing restaurants, stadiums. And it was just like another part of the business where it was, you're now representing brands versus like representing a retailer.
Yeah.
And now I'm trying to sell into the retailer. Like, so I'm learning this like other side of the business. And I really, really loved it. I would say it was much harder because being a buyer, you're like, yes, no, I don't want that. I want this. Like, you're just making the end
decision. Like, you're the client, pretty much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As the
supplier, you're the other end.
You're the other end.
Yeah, you're a salesperson.
And you have to learn how to sell.
Yeah.
And you have to learn, like, what each retailer cares about, what each client cares about, and, like, tweak your items for that. And, you know, I was like, this is so much harder but more rewarding.
Yeah.
Because when you make a sale, it doesn't feel like any, it feels like nothing else in the whole world.
100%. Yeah. I mean, for sure. Also, I mean, probably being on the client side helped you. But Sam's Club as a client was obviously very different than people you were selling to, right? So what skills do you think you brought as a client that you're able to sell maybe better than someone who hadn't had that experience?
I think I just understood what a buyer was looking for. Like, what makes a successful item at a retailer? And knowing how to talk the talk, it was like, okay, what velocities, like how quickly is this product turning off the shelf? In retail, velocity is everything.
Especially in grocery.
Yeah. So it was like, okay, we need a high velocity item. What's something that's incremental on their shelf? Like, it's not just a me too product. Like, what's going to really drive like new volume for them that they don't have? That was really important. And I was just like really just understanding how buyer's mind works. Especially with like margin. Like, if I can sell a product where I'm like, I know they're gonna make 5 points more margin on my item, and it's gonna like, the velocities are equivalent to another Gouda that they have on the shelf, but they're gonna make more margin, they're gonna want my item.
Yeah.
And like, knowing how I can negotiate and like bring down my cost to like help out the retailer for the purpose of selling it in and building that relationship. It was like all these little tricks of the trade.
That's amazing.
I could kind of use.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And okay, so you switched this, how long you were there, and then you decided to get an MBA, right? Because you're thinking kind of entrepreneurial side. So tell me about that.
Yeah, I spent only a year and a half there. Okay. And I was like really sad to leave so early, but I kind of felt like if I didn't go get my MBA now, I wasn't going to go do it.
For sure.
At that point, I was 26 or 27.
Kind of the deciding period. Yeah.
And... You know, I was probably like I wasn't the youngest person in my MBA class, but there were definitely people older than me. So it really, I didn't, I had this own pressure on myself when I could have waited a little bit, but that's fine. I had started working with Lindsay on Tassie.
Okay.
Though.
Okay.
So I was working at the importer, and then in the evenings, Lindsay and I would meet up in my Hell's Kitchen apartment and like start, we were like already formulating this idea for Hard Candy. And I was in this place where I was like, okay, I want to go back to business school. I have a full-time job and I want to do a startup. Like, I'm not going to be successful at all three. Because I was looking at going to Baruch like part-time.
Wow. Okay.
That's like what I was going to do for an MBA. And I was like, I can't do all three of these. Like, if I really want to do the startup, it's not going to work. Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to do a full-time MBA program and just focus on Tassie.
Yeah, totally.
Like, that's what I focused on.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And it was so cool because every class I took, it was like with the mindset of like, is this going to help me understand how to do a business?
And then when did the idea of Tassie come about? Like, what moment?
We were, so Lindsay and I were both like, you know, working our jobs. I was at the importer. She was working at Hain Celestial at the time in brand management. And we were like, are we going to work for people for the rest of our lives? You know, and I think having worked in like the food industry, we both built a lot of confidence because we were both really passionate about it. When you have passion about something, it gives you this like fake confidence because you're like, feel like you're in the right place.
Yeah.
And we were like, we can do this on our own.
Totally.
All these people are starting food companies. Yeah. They don't have food backgrounds. Yeah. Like, we could do
that
this.
That is actually true. So many people start, especially CPG companies,
without
and like
zero background.
Have certainly not definitely had a food science major and like 5 years like in the industry. Brand, that is actually crazy. I also don't think I know anyone else who's done that job. I feel like I love that too. Just like there's a lot of jobs that like are not emphasized, like I don't know, emphasized in the zeitgeist. Like I'm like, that's really
like
cool.
You're actually qualified.
Like
there's to, like,
so
start
much cool
company.
Stuff in this area. Yeah, exactly.
I thought I was qualified. I was naive. I'm like, yeah, we're qualified. We could do this. Granted, you do not need a background in anything to start a company. But
it
we
helps.
Were like,
I
it helps,
you, right?
So we were like, okay, so now what are we gonna do? Like, what's the idea? We went to Whole Foods in Columbus Circle, and we're like walking the aisle, and our mentality was like, okay, what's an area of the grocery store that hasn't seen innovation in a really long time that might be ripe for some disruption? That was our way of coming up with the idea.
It's a pretty good, I don't know, pretty good way to think, to start.
It's a business way of coming up.
Yeah, very much. Very MBA.
It was. Versus us being like,
what do we like?
I have a need that I'm trying to solve for myself.
Right. Correct.
And, you know, 2 million other people have the same need. Let's start this company. It was more like, where can we disrupt? And at the time, it was the candy space. Smart Sweets had like just launched nationwide with Whole Foods.
Okay.
They were really the
I
only
don't even know
ones.
What that is.
Yeah,
what's
it's
smart?
Like the, it has like the bright packaging and like the fish.
Yes,
low sugar
gummies. No sugar gummies. Yeah. Yes, I know what you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, really bright packaging. Yeah. And other than that, it was like dominated by the same brands for decades, specifically hard candy. It was like Werther's, Jolly Ranchers, Blow Pop, Dum Dums, Chupa Chup, and that was really it. And, you know, little kids eat lollipops. Older adults are eating sucking candies. They grew up with that item. It's nostalgic.
That's like what I imagine. I always think of like, when you told me hard candy, I think of like the dentist office.
Yeah. No,
you know,
and like
I'm
the candy dish. Like
the candy
old
dish and like an older receptionist, like, do you want a, you know, lollipop
Jolly
honey?
Rancher,
like a Jolly Rancher?
Seriously.
Yeah.
And like our generation, nobody's really touching this stuff.
Yeah.
So there's like younger kids and we all grew up eating lollipops.
Totally. Yeah.
So we were like, it's a really like nostalgic format. It's a known like format. It's not unique. Like we all know what a lollipop is.
Very familiar, very nostalgic. I would, very nostalgic.
And we were like, it's the oldest candy format.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And we were like, this is just something so interesting. We had started doing a ton of like customer discovery interviews, which is like the lingo they teach you in
business school,
startup,
these like focus groups,
schools.
Right?
Yeah, it's like having a ton of interviews with your hypothetical customer,
okay,
and just getting to understand what they value, what they care about, and why a product would be good for them without asking leading questions.
Okay,
and what we found was, with like corporate office workers, young corporate office workers sitting at their desk like all day, 2-3 p.m. comes and you're like either bored out of your mind, you're tired, or you're like, I just need an effing break. I need to get away from this computer. You go to the vending machine, you go to the breakout room, there's like the leftover office cake, you eat the cake, you eat the Doritos, you feel guilty about it. And a lot of times you're snacking because you just like want something to do.
Totally.
To keep your
And you can't drink coffee at 2 p.m. Like.
So, also like you want a sugar rush and you're tired.
So we were like, hard candy is like such an interesting solve for this because it's like a mindless thing you can pop into your mouth and suck on and be like.
For sure. And it's like way lower calories and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's it lasts a long time. So like you can suck on it a long time. Yeah.
Yes. You should have been our advocate. It's like an oral fixation too. Yeah,
totally.
My analyst literally has a jar of Jolly Ranchers. It was like all filled and now it's gone. So like we would love to have Tassie.
The other thing, I know. Yeah. The other thing that's like also actually, isn't that a way people quit smoking?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Really? Especially a lollipop.
Yeah.
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 So we were like, okay, let's go after corporate offices with hard candy. But then COVID hit.
Okay.
And we had like been developing this hard candy for a while. And we were like, all right, let's just pivot to retail and grocery stores and just see what kind of traction we're getting. Like our wholesale strategy was like bulk selling into these corporate offices. Now we were like, okay, we have to create a package and sell it into grocery stores, which is something we knew how to do. Like, so that wasn't intimidating. It was just like, okay, this is a totally different strategy because we can either stop the business or we can figure it out at this point. And so that's when we decided to launch into retail. What is so crazy though, is we contacted over like 150 manufacturers around the world to try to find someone that would make hard candy for us. And we couldn't. Like, we found one person. One person.
That's insane. That's also crazy. Why do you think that is? Why is it so hard?
In the United States, a lot of hard candy manufacturers have kind of consolidated.
Okay.
Well, because it's not just, as popular of a format.
Yeah, and there's only five clients, right?
There's a lot of private label that are like for like Chase Bank, you know?
Okay.
The lollipops at the bank.
Yeah. But that's just the wrapper, right? It's the same product.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So there are like some, there are manufacturers that don't have a brand name that are selling in bulk to like food service.
That makes sense.
Something to that extent. But they've consolidated and it's just not a trendy item anymore. Yeah. So people have, you just know, switched to different manufacturers or died off. And nobody would want to take on a custom formulation.
Okay. And also small.
And small batch.
Small batch. Yeah.
And like we had found this awesome partner and she's like, okay, our minimum order quantity, like the minimum amount you have to order is 1 million lollipops. Oh, and I'm like, I need 1,000 lollipops. Okay. I just need to test this item.
It has to be at least it's $1 or something, right? I mean, what is 50 cents? I mean, like, yeah, it's like $500. It must be at least $500,000.
I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's also crazy. How long will it take you to sell 1 million?
Well, we were also like, we're not going to raise money on
a experiment. Yeah.
We have no idea. We don't even know if people even want
this. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Stuff. So we ended up finding someone that would take us on. And we had originally wanted to develop a low sugar candy with like a really clean ingredient list. This person that was like, I'll take you girls on, had a sugar-free facility.
Okay.
So we were in a really weird place where we were like, okay, after all of this time we spent like working on the formula, finding a manufacturer, this took like a year and a half. I'm not even joking.
Also being said no to by 150 people.
Yeah.
It's just
so many disappointments and almost, right?
So we were like, okay, do we just launch a sugar-free product
and
like, just test it? Like, let's test the branding. Let's test flavors. Let's test caffeine. Let's test vitamin C. Let's test acai berry, mocha, spicy mango, sour strawberry, sour watermelon. That's what we did. And we just tested with this person because we could do small batches. And we tested a ton of flavors, the functional ingredients, and we got a lot of traction. And what was interesting is our main core consumer ended up being like people that had to eat sugar-free, diabetics, or people that really just had to watch their sugar content. And then a lot of younger consumers that really resonated with our branding, which was like these big faces, like I was saying, like really bold, big faces,
also fun cool colors, flavors, right?
Really fun flavors.
Like, which I feel like I haven't heard, like, I don't know, that would make me try something. Like,
yeah.
If I saw an an acai berry candy, I would try it.
I'd of course.
Like, I love acai bowls, right? I don't know. Mocha, and I love mocha.
It was like interesting because it was really, really good candy for sugar-free. But for Lindsay and I, we were like, we don't love sugar alcohols. And to make a sugar-free hard candy, you need a sugar alcohol.
Yeah, so you used like a Splenda pretty much, right?
We used this ingredient called isomalt, which is a derivative of beet sugar. And it's what gives you like the bulking agent. Because hard candy is also like all sugar really
hard
and corn
to
syrup.
I also think like it must be so hard to formulate. That's probably why there's not that many manufacturers, right?
It's hard to formulate. Yeah. Because you can't have like any moisture left in the product.
Okay.
And
you probably have to have really specific machinery. I would assume.
Because that's, we looked at making it ourselves when we couldn't find anyone.
Yeah.
But we're like, we're not going to invest all this capital in your concept. Get, like, we don't even know.
Like, I don't even know. What do you need, a robot? I think you literally need a robot. I don't know what you need, but like, I don't know. I'm just thinking about the factories I've been to. It. They're always like crazy looking.
In candy manufacturing, like, it's a little bit more chill. Yeah. But yes.
Like, I don't know. I'm thinking of trying to talk Willy Wonka. Like. Yeah, like, I have no idea.
Oh, it was so funny. So, yeah, and we did really well. Retailers brought us, any retailer we pitched was actually pretty interested in taking the product because they hadn't seen innovation in the space. And they're like, oh, yeah, like, hard candy's so sleepy. Like, if we can reinvigorate it, let's go. What we learned, like, pretty quickly, though, is that it's a slow velocity category because if you think about it, they last so long.
So you buy, like, one bag and, yeah.
It takes you, like, 3 months. And you're not selling hard candy in little baby bags.
Yeah, no, you have to
sell them.
Yeah, for sure.
Because
no one's going to pay, like, what's needed for, like, one hard candy. They're not going
to pay a dollar. It doesn't make any sense.
They can buy when they buy a huge bag of Jolly Ranchers for $1.99, right?
Exactly. Yes. Like, the consumer perception wasn't there. So we had to put them in big bulk bags. And we were like, this is a really slow category. And our retailers were like, we love you, girls. We love your brand. You need to get into something faster.
Yeah.
And we also were like, we can't build a business off this. It's just too slow. But that whole process took 4 years.
Oh,
so
wow.
Launching like sugar free, we gained enough traction where we were then able to scale to a much larger manufacturer and make the formula we always wanted to make.
That's exciting.
Not
it wasn't sugar free.
Yeah. Okay.
It was low sugar, 6 ingredients, really simple. The process of scaling up in this large manufacturer took a year.
Yeah.
And so we had to wait all of this time to start selling the product we always wanted to sell. So that was like a 2.5 year process.
And at that point, you're done your MBA, so you're working on this full time.
Yeah.
Get this product. We started getting this product out into stores and we're like, wow, it's still a really slow product.
And because you, and you had like a partnership with big retail, right?
And we had like,
who were you selling in at that time?
At that time we were selling, oh, we were like in Urban Outfitters. We were in, yeah, it was,
that's
so
interesting.
Random.
Okay, that's cool.
Central Market. We were in a lot of regional grocers. Okay. Foxtrots.
Got it.
Because we were waiting to
whatever.
Hold off on this new product, this new low sugar, clean formula.
Yeah.
Because we were like, we were able to drop the price, I think like 40 to 50%.
Wow.
For like double the amount of candy.
Wow.
It was like, we were able to streamline because we had scale. Our ingredients were cheaper because sugar-free ingredients are really,
expensive.
Really expensive.
Yeah, I imagine.
So we were able to like do all this like value enhancing and we're like, the product's going to move faster.
Yeah.
And in reality, it really didn't move faster.
Okay.
So unfortunately, that was like a really hard truth to hear. And then we were like, we got to do something different. And this was like September of 2023.
What were your like retailers saying at that point? Were they saying like, we can't sell this anymore? Were
they
weren't off of it? Yeah.
They were like fine with it moving slow because that's what the category
average
was.
Like they expected kind of this outcome.
But for us, we're like, this is not sustainable.
Yeah,
it's just our when we scaled up,
inventory was so high. Your gross margin was probably like 2%, like something like not.
It
really
wasn't. Our margin was actually pretty good.
Really, okay.
The issue was that when we scaled to this larger manufacturer, our minimum orders were so large.
So you were just holding.
We were all of our cash was tied up in the
inventory. Exactly. So you just had such a big cash flow problem.
Yeah. And that was what
and
was
like
gonna
holding
kill
inventory
us.
Is just expensive. Like it's just a really expensive thing.
It's so expensive. But the product has a 2 year shelf life. Like you could
hold it. But it's still
if we had the cash coming in.
Yeah, totally.
But what was crazy was like this was September 2023. We were like, okay, we're gonna start innovating and developing a new item. I'm not joking. We get a cold email from the Whole Foods national candy buyer. Hey, we found your product in Austin, either probably at Central Market or Foxtrot. We love what you're doing. We love your positioning. We're trying to build out a hard candy set. How many locations can you launch in?
Wow.
It was really crazy. And we were like, we're trying to get out of this category.
Right after this.
You're like, fuck, really? You're like, now? Like, now? You couldn't have come? Yeah.
But they really, they had this, like, idea that they really wanted, like, it was a need that they were trying to fill with hard candy. And we were like, how many locations can we launch in where we don't have to pay a slotting fee?
Yeah.
Because we were like, we're not going to keep putting money behind this product that we know is just, we know it's going to move slow.
So slow. Like, we know the end
we
of the story.
We know the end of the story.
We know the end of the story. Yeah.
But I get that you want to build
innovation.
This out.
Yeah, totally.
So they were like, okay, if you become a local forager brand and you launch in one region, you don't have to pay slotting fees.
Okay.
So that's what we ended up doing in the Midwest. And we launched the product. You know, the product was in stores for however many months before they review. And they're like, we would like to keep the product. And we're like, no. We really, at this point, we can't justify producing for one Whole Foods region because our productions are so
You're like, you're just burning cash. You're burning so much cash.
And we were like, we just have to get into our
next. I'm like, I feel like you should have been like, buy the formulation and like produce it yourself.
We were willing to do that, actually. But we were just... We were like, I don't even want to be involved anymore kind of thing.
Yeah, I get it.
So we started working on we had two different areas we could go because we were a candy brand.
Yeah.
We could go into the gummy space or we can go into like chocolate snacking.
And you kept the name. So Tazzy's the name.
We kept the name.
Yeah.
And
you kept the relationships. That's good. So they liked you. They're like, your eyes are exciting. Do something different. Yeah.
So we explored like the gummy innovation space and started working with two different manufacturers. But well, for what we wanted to do, these manufacturers didn't have expertise in. So we were like, we don't really want to go down that path. And Lindsay and I both love chocolate. And we're like, let's just do something in chocolate. And chocolate
there's less
snacking.
Innovation in chocolate. I feel like with gummies, there's like Behave and like
so
all these
many.
I mean, for sure. Also just like weed. I just immediately think of weed with gummies, don't you?
I don't.
I think a lot of consumers do.
I do. I immediately think weed.
I think of my supplement gummies that I take
every day. Or I think like vitamins. Like, yeah, vitamins or like sleep gummies. Like, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of like different stuff going on. Like less than like what I would eat too.
For sure.
Versus like also I love chocolate, so.
Same. We both do too. So we were we ended up finding this awesome partner.
Okay.
Who was based in Switzerland. And they had this like food innovation lab, but then this ability to scale you.
Cool.
So you could like you could grow with them. And so Lindsay and I fly to Switzerland.
Whoa.
And we innovate for a week and come up with like an entire product line.
That's so sick.
And we did
this. That's such a cool. Did you just pay them like a fee or something to use their lab or what?
Yeah, we paid them a fee, but it was like our ideas and then they helped us they helped us like do the R&D
kind of like an incubator
that's
actually such a cool business model though
super cool
how'd you find that
we were connect Lindsay was connected from an old colleague
okay
you know that whole process took like 3 months so it was so funny because like we were in hard candy for 4 years we learned so much and it was grueling and slow and so painful because like the scaling up process and I'm not even like going into the detail
like
of how hard this was.
You're fighting an uphill
these
battle.
4 years.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. That is a journey, like literally a full 4 years. So then also at the very end when you're going to quit, have a Whole Foods come in. I mean, that's all, like all of it is just a lot of disappointments. Yeah.
It was a lot of disappointments. And someone that, you know, I was so happy in my career.
Yeah.
I wasn't like really looking to switch. I just wanted something more for myself where I was like, I can do this on my own.
Because you were like in your passion. Like
I was in my passion. Yeah. I was in my, I never, like people would complain about work all the time.
Yeah.
And I never, and I wasn't making that much money, right? I wasn't like making finance money, but I didn't care. I was so passionate.
Happy. Yeah.
So fulfilled. To then step into this for 4 years where it's grueling, fighting, and disappointment after disappointment, I started to just like, I lost all my confidence.
Yeah.
Like I was like really rock bottom.
You're so pessimistic. You're just like, nothing's going to work out. Yeah.
So pessimistic. And So those 4 years, but it's so funny how much we learned to then be able to turn a product around in 3 months.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, Delia, like take a step back. Like
look at like where you are.
Yeah, you really have learned something here.
Totally.
So we go to Switzerland and we develop this whole line, and it was this line of milk chocolate snacking bark.
Ooh.
So you know bark thins?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love peppermint bark. Like yes. It's like that, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I love peppermint bark. That's like my favorite like Christmas snack.
Yes.
But, like, I love it. Yep. Yeah.
And Bark Thins only does dark chocolate. And our insight was really we wanted to focus on milk chocolate initially. 50% of Americans like milk chocolate. And we wanted to make like indulgent milk chocolate snacking bark.
Love.
So think like crisped rice, like salted caramel with pretzels. Like it was like this really indulgent line. Like we made these homemade cookies and crushed them up and put them into the like crunchy cookies.
It's giving like
bark.
Godiva vibes almost.
It was
like.
Good. And we made the chocolate from scratch, like bean to bark.
Wow. And also in Switzerland, probably fire.
Like made the whole formula, and our whole shtick was we still wanted to like focus on sugar content. So it was like high cocoa milk chocolate. So more cocoa than sugar.
Yep.
Yeah.
Without adding anything funky, like without having to add a sweetener or like monk fruit or stevia. It was like really just like super, super clean.
Ooh.
And we debuted it at the largest Sweets and Snacks Expo in the US. It's called Sweets and Snacks.
Really? That exists?
Yeah,
where
I love
is that?
That?
That's ever, yeah.
Indianapolis is typically where it is, but it switches between that and Chicago.
Okay.
And every big guy is there. Like Jelly Belly, Star. It's all like, all the big brands you can think of, and every snack or sweet buyer.
Yeah.
Starburst, Jelly Belly, like Frito-Lay, Pepsi, like every snack company.
God. Wow.
And then like a bunch of startups. And people loved this bark. Like they were like,
going
this
crazy.
Is, people loved it. We had so many people be like, this is the best thing I've had at this show.
Wow.
Wow.
Like coming back multiple times. And we just had so much hype, and we're like, oh my God.
This is it.
You're like, this is it. We're here. We're like, this is what we've fought for 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's our year. This is May 2024. Well, hello. Cocoa prices skyrocketed. And when we started to do the math, you know, we're making this in Switzerland. We decided to partner with this Swiss partner because you guys said it. You're like, wow, they sound like an amazing,
super cool company.
And for us, we struggled so hard to find partners on the hard candy that it was so refreshing.
Totally.
To be with people that wanted to do innovation.
Also, I feel like Swiss chocolate, that must be the highest quality chocolate.
Yes.
I can't imagine.
Well, everything we were doing from scratch.
Everything. Yeah. So.
And we were controlling the whole process.
Yeah. You can't really do that with American made.
When we started to be like, okay, now we go down the path. Lindsay went down the path of like logistics, importing the product. And you know, I had some background from working for the importer. We were like, how are we going to import this product? It's going to be so expensive because chocolate melts. It has to be on a refrigerated full container, shipping across the ocean. Mm-hmm. Like this stuff is going to melt, and refrigeration is so expensive. Yeah. And then cocoa prices like tripled. So when we start to do the math, we're like, this product, nobody's going to buy this product on the shelf. It's going to be way too expensive. So we were like, okay, what did people love at the trade show? They loved like the high quality chocolate, and they loved the crunch and like the indulgence of this bark. So we were like, how do we develop something that's similar to that, that's cheaper? Because bark is like 90% cocoa, 90% chocolate.
Interesting.
And we at the same time had developed these like mini cookie things covered in chocolate. And it was for a totally different retailer. And Lindsay was like, Delia, why don't we make this for Tassie? Like we can make really fun, funky cookie flavors. You get the crunch. We have like, we source our really good high chocolate. And we test this concept of like crunch, high-end chocolate, fun flavor.
And that would be in the U.S. versus
Well, we ended up finding someone in the United States. We found someone in Peru, and we found someone in Canada and the U.S. And we were like, we have to make this domestically. Lindsay had some weird like foresight. where she's like, we need to make this tariffs. In the United States.
The tariffs. I was going to say the tariffs starting to happen now, I guess.
Wait, that's amazing.
Wow, that's great.
Because I think Trump was starting to talk about that, honestly, in 2023.
It was last year.
And I was like, whatever, Lindsay. Yeah. And she's like, no, we have to make this.
She's like, we cannot have another fucking thing happen. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about it because I'm like, Switzerland had a 30% tax.
Yeah, they have a really, really high, especially on luxury. You know, it'll be considered a luxury good. So, thank God you switched at that point. You would have had to switch now.
Great for
you. You would have had to switch now.
So, yeah. And we launched this in, I guess it was like October of 2024.
Congratulations.
So it was crazy because May, we go to the expo and we had locked and loaded Switzerland. Yeah. We're ready to go. Then we're like, crap, cocoa price is high. We shouldn't be importing this product. We then had to find another manufacturer, scale up, do the product development. And we did that all within like
7 months, 8 months.
And from May, from May to October, it was like 5 months.
Yeah.
Wow. Like,
damn. Okay, that's cool.
I love that.
Wow.
So now we have this new product. God.
Okay, and so now you have, they're basically like cookie bites. Okay, should we try them?
Try them.
Which one are your most popular?
Yeah, what's your favorite?
I think, this is our brand new one. Okay. Well, do you like dark chocolate?
I love dark chocolate.
Oh, yeah, then do that.
Okay.
That whole bag is only 6 grams of sugar.
What a cute little bag. Did you design these yourself?
Yeah.
They're really cute.
Well, we work with this amazing graphic designer, Heather.
That's amazing.
This is also clean, low ingredients.
This is the shtick. It's everything you would bake with at home.
Okay.
Butter.
Only 140
eggs,
calories.
Sugar. Mm. And then really high quality chocolate. Mm-hmm. They're really good. Yeah.
Wow.
And what we learned from the hard candies was we couldn't go after any impulse channels because they was all sold in bulk.
Yeah.
And we were like, we want to get into coffee shops, bagel shops, bodegas, delis.
No, for sure.
Anywhere that you're buying a little treat. Mm-hmm. And you can eat the entire serving.
No, for sure. Actually,
so
I feel
that's
how
for me. I will never when I'm grocery shopping, go and buy a big thing of Oreos or something, as I feel like it's just too bad. But I totally buy cookies all the time. Like I'll buy a cookie at the coffee shop. I'll buy a small treat when I feel like it, on my period, or you know what I'm saying. But it's or having a bad day.
Totally.
But it's but I won't. I feel it feels too bad. I feel too guilty to go to the grocery store and buy a huge bag of something.
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This
is targeting our age group a lot better.
It was
delicious.
Yeah.
Also, 140 calories. This whole thing.
At work, I literally.
You should tell them
there's
the movies.
I
would buy this at the movies.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you have this, and now are you in stores? Where are you? What is your strategy now?
What is our strategy?
Are you D2C at all?
We are, but you know what? Chocolate's so hard.
I was
going to
say it must be really hard to ship.
It's a pain in the butt. So we really are focused on retail.
Okay.
And we kind of pulled back from everything. We were in national distributors with our hard candy.
Yeah.
And we are now really in regional, local distributors. Whole Foods Midwest switched out.
Okay.
The
hard
candy.
So you're in Whole Foods Midwest.
So they took the peanut butter and the dark chocolate.
Wow.
Amazing.
But you should try that one.
I'm going to try.
That one's so good. It's
here, I'll try this one too. Peanut butter. I love peanut butter.
It's my favorite chocolate chip cookie that's sold in a green bag with a woman's name.
Yep. Yep. We have those at work and I eat a bag a day.
Better.
I love this.
Yeah. The peanut butter.
It's like Reese's.
Yeah, it's kind of
I love peanut butter.
People say they're akin to a Girl Scout cookie a lot.
Oh, love.
Because there's not many chocolate-covered cookies.
No.
All right.
And a lot of chocolate-covered cookies aren't real chocolate.
It doesn't really feel like a cookie.
Mm.
I feel like it feels a little bit more
This is insane. This is so good.
I'm going to try this one too. It's really good.
Wow. So yeah, we're in really local stores. We're partnering with these small distributors that basically serve as mom and pops.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So we're starting really in Westchester County.
Okay.
And then New York City and the Midwest, Chicago, Minneapolis. Those are our hot spots. Foxtrot, we're back in. But we're starting everything from scratch. We're going to be on QVC.
Oh, cool.
This month, which is exciting.
It is exciting. Are you going back to Sweets and Snacks? That's in May, right?
We aren't. We're going to do the Fancy Food Show instead.
Okay.
Ooh, awesome.
But
very cool.
Yeah, it's rebuilding everything. And it's hard for us because it's totally, we focused on grocery stores last time and now we're focusing on, I call it the alternative channel, which we are not experts in at all. So it's learning and finding the right partners. Mm-hmm. The hardest part is how to get the product from my warehouse to a one-off store.
Yeah.
So it's finding the right distributor, the middleman.
For sure. That's just but why you're hard to find. Right?
Yeah.
I guess that's why you're regional
right now. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that makes sense. So you're like basically so East Coast right now, like Northeast. Yes. Really, like, I guess Tri-State.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is such an incredible story. I feel like you've like lived 10 lives and like you really need to like
have a migraine. Do you talk about it?
Do you feel like you finally found it? Like, is this like the product? Do you love it? Do you feel like it's it?
I love it. Okay. But what's really exciting me is we're starting to pursue a lot of private label opportunities.
Oh, cool.
So basically developing innovation for other brands. So let's say like coffee chains or even like retailers.
It makes me feel like, I don't know.
We love, Lindsay and I love innovation.
Yeah.
It's our food science background. We love the product development part. Building a brand is so hard.
Yeah.
But if a retailer came to us and they're like, hey, can you develop a stuffed pistachio Dubai cookie for us? I'm like,
for like an
airplane, I can do that.
No, for sure.
I would love to do that and that's build it at scale.
Or you could like do a collab with Milk Bar. Like,
I mean, I'm thinking like so Maman. I don't know. That made me really think like, Maman does a lot of that stuff. I don't know. I feel like you
should definitely pitch them.
Mm-hmm. Or like LPQ, I feel like would do it.
There are so many. So like, I think this product is awesome. Like, I think it's a really, really good product. But I'm even more excited about like the baked good innovation space in general.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Seeing what we can do.
Well, I think I love this story because like you don't really see like, you know, founders being like, oh, I'm gonna do this and then like I have to pivot because of some XYZ reasons and like it's just so real and raw, like your entire story.
Oh, yeah.
And you're still figuring it out. Which is like very, very normal. And like a lot of people are like, all right, like this founder has it all figured out, like that's it. But this is such like an honest conversation.
Definitely. I always tell my dad, because I struggle a lot with like the self-worth piece because I equate so much like financial success to self-worth. I think it's kind of capitalism and the American
dream. For sure. I mean, growing up in New York City too.
Like New York City, Cornell, it's NBA.
Cornell, I mean, and you're,
And where I'm like, we're starting from scratch again with like very little money left in our bank. And it's like, we better figure it out and make it work because we don't want to raise money. We want to like try to build this. And it's like, we're on our second business. That's how I feel. Like we're on our second business. It's the same brand.
You are.
But it's like restarting the whole thing again from scratch and not being afraid to do it and just like going all in. But it's hard. It's like a mental like check every day. Like, you can do this, girl.
Right.
Like, keep it up.
Yeah. I guess on that note, like, you've given us so much wisdom.
What do you think is the one advice
that you'd give to a first time founder?
I would say go for it. I'm like very spiritual and I'm like, you really have one life. If you have an idea and you have courage, just do it. And a lot of like young women, I think too, think about, oh, maybe I should go to business school. And I'm like, maybe don't go to business school. Maybe start a business.
Yeah.
And you will learn so much. I am so much of like, you've got one life. You've got to do what you want to do. If it doesn't work out, okay.
It's true.
At least you
know how many people don't try?
I agree. I feel like, honestly, I agree. Like, if it doesn't work out, it's fine. You will be fine. You will survive.
And
you will move on and you will learn things.
I worried for so long of like, it was kind of like a pride thing. Like, oh my God, if I fail, what are people going to think?
Yeah.
And it's like, who are these people?
No one cares.
No one cares.
Literally only you. Like, you think about yourself.
Just you.
People think about themselves.
Like, of course.
Yes.
And it's like, you have to do what's right for you.
Yeah.
And you always regret the things you don't do.
Yeah.
You never regret. I mean, of course, if you like do something so crazy and bad that hurts yourself, you typically don't regret the things you try and go after. So that's my advice. Just go for it.
I love that. I think this is a great ending. This was an incredible episode, Delia. Thank you so much for telling us your story. We're super excited to get Tazzy. Where can we find you?
I would say, and if you're in New York, you can go to the Good Smart
right
now. Otherwise, it's like Amazon and Econ.
Okay.
Until we like build out.
Tazzy?
Oh, yeah. Tazzy Candy.
Tazzy Candy. Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for everyone for listening. If you have any questions for Delia or us, please reach us at womansplainpod1@gmail.com. We're also womansplainpod on all the socials. Thank you so much, Delia. And thank you, guys.
Thank you.
See Tazzy.
Woo!